Now, tell us, what is, I guess, the situation for men's sperm health here in Australia at the moment? Is it so much lower than previous years?
Yes, look, in Australia's following the same trend as the other, westernised and sort of countries such as America and the UK and other places in Europe, where we have seen over a 50% drop in sperm count really in the last almost 20 years.
Wow.
So it's really accelerating. And look, the reasons why that is probably multifactorial, of which, as you say, diet quality is one of those.
Mm.
But the full reason about why that's declining so quickly is probably also to do with other lifestyle factors such as obesity. But there's also people that are suggesting it's also to do with since the Industrial Revolution and more chemicals in our environment, particularly estrogenic chemicals in our environment.
Wow, okay. People eating too much soy milk from the sounds of things. So many different things are contributing to this one. Do we know how many men in Australia are affected by a low sperm count?
Yeah, so the last statistics, it's roughly around 1 in 20 men will have a sperm count low enough that they will be exhibit some sort of subfertility or infertility phenotype, so that they might need to seek, go and see a doctor about, helping in terms of conception.
Mm.
So about 1 in 20, which is fairly high.
And how many are you seeing through the IVF industry coming to clinics?
So certainly male factor infertility has risen substantially in the last sort of 10 to 20 years in IVF as well. And I think that that's reflective of this decline in sperm count that we see. So in terms of what we see in our clinic, certainly around 50% of cases are probably associated with male infertility.
Wow.
So what we see is around a third are probably to do with what we would call female factors, such as, blocked tubes or endometriosis or polycystic ovary syndrome. And about a third of them are entirely to do with low sperm count or low sperm function, which can also be about motility or the ability of the sperm to actually bind to the egg.
Okay.
And then about a third is probably a mild phenotype on both, which when combined contributes to subfertility and infertility.
When we talk about reproductive health, and especially when we're talking about infertility, so much of the conversation is focused on women's health and women's infertility. We know a lot more than we did about endometriosis and polycystic ovaries. All these sorts of things tend to be talked about a bit more, in my opinion, than men's reproductive health. Why do you think this is? Why do you think we're focusing so little on what is essentially 50% of the equation?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to where the scientific evidence has been, and the understanding and all of the research that was really done in infertility and subfertility was very much focused in the early days around female health and female infertility. And I have to say, even for my own research, that was where we began. And it's only really been in the last 10 years that we have begun to understand that equally men's health is just as important. Because I think for a long time, people were focused just simply on things such as sperm count, which although it is declining, has only really begun declining in the last few years. But I think what we're beginning to understand is having a much more sophisticated knowledge that it's actually the molecular health of the inside of the sperm that is really important as well.
Wow.
And that's where we've now begun to understand some of these things such as diet, obesity, smoking, because their effects are really catastrophic in terms of some of the internal workings of the sperm.
So you can have a relatively good sperm count, but if the quality of the sperm isn't, where it should be, then you're going to face issues.
And that's exactly right. And we're only really begin to understand that in the last few years. And one of the limitations that we have in terms of helping couples and what primarily physicians have is that actually some of the measures and the markers that we can use to test that are still in their very infancy. But we're going to see, I would expect, in the next few years, much better tests for men as well that actually can assess some of these things and actually help men understand where their fertility is at and therefore enable them to actually intervene, because there are some things you can do to actually improve both your sperm count and also your sperm health.
How would a man go about assessing his reproductive health and his sperm health? I know I had a conversation with my doctor not that long ago, and there were all these tests I could do about my own reproductive health as a woman and all these markers that can be checked and vitamins that should be at a certain level. But for men, what does that look like?
So I have to say that for men, it's really lagging, you know, many, many years behind. And I think that's some of the reason why male infertility is underestimated is because our ability to test it at the moment is quite crude. So you would go to your GP and they would likely order you a semen analysis, which really is just checking for sperm count, which we know is important, sperm motility, which we also know is important. But that's sort of the extent of what the current testing actually does. But those two things are quite important. And if you have a low sperm count and you have reduced motility of the sperm, you're much more likely to be at risk of being subfertile.
Gosh, now I know women can't do a lot for their egg counts or some physiological things that are just the way it is. Is it the same for men? Can they improve their sperm count or the quality of their sperm? Is there anything they can be doing in their lifestyle choices or their health choices that could be upping their chances of fertility?
So look, there's studies are coming out that suggest that for men, there are things that they can do. And part of that is because as a woman, we're born with the number of eggs that we have. Whereas for men, they're constantly making new sperm. So there is actually things that they can do. So improving your diet, there is a couple of studies that have shown, and they're quite small at the moment, but have shown that if you improve the quality of your diet, you can improve the quality of your sperm. So upping your intake of fruits and vegetables, reducing junk food, so getting rid of saturated fats and trans fats, which have been shown to be quite bad for sperm, you should be able to improve some of the sperm health. But also moderate exercise actually has been shown to have quite a significant improvement in sperm health and sperm count. There was a study a few years ago that showed that if you watched 5 hours of TV, your sperm count was halved.
Oh my gosh.
And that's really around a surrogate measure of being of a sedentary lifestyle. So just getting up and walking, it doesn't have to be, you know, intense exercise, but just even walking, low impact walking, 30 minutes a few times a day has been shown to improve testosterone levels and therefore improve sperm count.
Gosh, I've always been so curious to know if that old wives' tale about wearing boxer briefs or just briefs has an effect on a man's sperm count as well. Is there any science behind that?
Well, in actual fact, there is quite a lot of science about the benefits of boxers versus briefs. And it's not so much to do with sperm count. It's to do with, again, that health inside the sperm, because actually sperm don't like heat. And they actually prefer to be a couple of degrees lower in temperature than the body. And so when you have briefs or if you're, there's actually been a few studies that have shown that if you're a cyclist and wear a lot of Lycra and do a lot of long distance cycling, their sperm counts are lower than and their sperm health is lower than the average male.
Wow.
So, yeah, so again, that's been, we believe that's to do with the extra heat. So heat's not good. And so that's why, Andrology Australia a few years ago released the idea of wearing boxers, because it just reduces the impact of heat and removes that out of the equation as a potential confounder for fertility.
Well, there we go. Middle-aged men in Lycra, it's not good for anyone. It's not good for you. Michelle, we'll have to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us this morning. I feel like I learnt so much.
No worries. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you.
That was Professor Michelle Lane. She's the Director of Science and Innovation at Monash IVF Group.